You're back with Annie on 3CR Breakfast, and we're going to finish off the program with a chat I had with Meredith Bergman, who, with Anadia Wheatley, have published a book called Radicals Remembering the 60s. And there was a Melbourne launch, on Thursday, and that's what she was referring to in the conversation. I did go along. It was very interesting indeed. And this is what Meredith had to say about Radicals Remembering the 60s. Thanks very much for talking to me today about Radicals Remembering the 60s. You co-authored it, but obviously you were there on the ground. So why was it important to write this book?
Well, my co-author and I, Nadia Wheatley, decided that there needed to be a book about the 60s and, you know, the radical young people of the time. And we said, well, if we don't do it, someone else will and they'll muck it up. So that was why we wrote the book. And, yes, both of us were very active ourselves, and there are chapters about our own lives as well as many chapters about other people's lives. And I was a young... from a fairly conservative background, arrived at university, and it was Vietnam that totally radicalised me, changed my life, actually.
You were coming out of what was probably considered to be incredibly boring. I mean, I'm younger than you, but I do remember having been brought up in a country town thinking that a bus has to come along and take me away from this place.
Well, I grew up in a place called Beecroft in the Sydney suburbs, and it was so homogeneous that I was at university before I met a Catholic. That is how white-bread those suburbs were. And I remember coming home from uni and saying to my mum, "Oh, Mum, there are all these Catholics at uni." And she said, "Oh, yes, dear, there's lots in the world." I was, let alone meet a migrant or a First Nations person or something like that. It was a very boring existence. And we'd only ever had one Prime Minister. I mean, children of today or teenagers of today have had 8 Prime Ministers. We'd had one. It was a very, very... that's why when we talk about the 60s, we actually date it from about 1965 to about 1975. And at the Melbourne launch last night, when we were talking about that decision, everyone in the crowd nodded, because that's how they think of the 60s too. It's the sort of late 60s, early 70s, and that's the 60s.
Yeah, and there was actually some controversy around the concept of radical, being radical.
You mean the use of the word
radical? Yeah, the use of the word. Margaret Rodenite actually suggested that it would have been better to be my generation, but that could be because she comes from an arts background.
Yes, she, of course, her conversion or radicalisation was really interesting, because she describes herself as quite, she said she was the only right-wing folk singer in the scene. And when you delve into her background, it was a very, very Catholic background, and very Melbourne, very Catholic. And
I should jump in here, Irish Catholic.
Very, very. And her radicalisation came about through the songs she was singing, and especially one particular song by Malvina Reynolds called What Have They Done to the Rain. And she says she'd been singing it for some time before she realised it was about nuclear fallout. And that was the sort of issue that helped radicalise her. One of the things we found when we talked to people was that they had different triggers. We really imagined that Vietnam would be the radicalisation trigger for almost everyone, and it just wasn't. For John Derham, for instance, it was the hanging of Ronald Ryan. He was outside Pentridge Jail in February 1967 when that happened. And for Gary Williams, one of our First Nations participants, I said to him, "Well, what about Vietnam?" And he said, "Oh, no, we didn't. We thought of Vietnam as a white fellas' war." And I said, "Well, what was your radicalisation process?" And he says it was the 1971 Springbok tour, when a all-white, racially selected football team came to Australia. And so that was his radicalisation. And for the Brisbane people, it was the Right to March demonstrations, where they weren't even allowed to demonstrate on the streets of Brisbane.
I found that
a different trigger.
Yeah, I found that story about Brian Labor. What a fellow. What a guy.
Yes. And he's a professional tennis coach. And Rod Laver's cousin, of course. They were very different characters, the people we interviewed. And that was what made writing the book such fun.
Well, let's get to the writing of the book, because I was a bit fascinated by the actual practicalities of writing the book. One, you've got two people who are obviously alert to what's going on because you were there, but you both have great skills and you're mates. But you must have had to think about the approach, because I noticed you start off like a good vox pop person, like in radio. You start off with a clear defining question, which was, what were your triggers? But it's quite clear that you did a lot of research around these people. One, you didn't know them at the time necessarily, and you wanted questions answered as well.
Absolutely. And it's very important to research what people say to you so that you can actually put what they're saying to you in context. And the way we went about doing it was, both of us interviewed our participants. There were just one or two that only one of us could do because of geographic problems. But so we both interviewed them, and then one of us sat down and wrote the chapter, but then the other person had input into what we finally wrote. And I learnt a lot from Nadia, who's a very, very experienced writer, you know, award-winning writer. So I learnt a lot from her along the way. And she's an amazing researcher too. Like, she'd check on every little detail.
Hmm. I love the... because you are actually Sydney-centric, and if someone were to do the same project for it set in another town, like if they're in Melbourne... Hugh McSpadden, for example, came to my mind in regards to the person you spoke to who was part of the happenings in Sydney. That was such a fantastic interview you had with that fellow.
Yes. It's a bit New South Wales-centric, not so much Sydney, because a lot of our characters came from northern New South Wales or...
And you do say so, but that's okay.
Yes, but five or six of our participants are Melbourne-based, and five of them were actually on the stage with us last night. It was wonderful. We had Gary Foley, who launched the book. And then we had Margaret Rodenight, the wonderful folk singer from the 60s and 70s. Peter Batchelor, who later became the Labor Minister for Transport. But he was radicalised by his... he was working in a mattress factory in the outer suburbs of Melbourne. And he was radicalised by that activity, which I thought was interesting. And then we had John Derham, who was a young actor. He was a 17-year-old actor who ended up at the Emerald Hill Theatre, which is a very, very important sort of cultural institution in Melbourne. And it was the plays of the English playwrights like Arden and Osborne and even Spike Milligan. It was those anti-war plays coming from Britain that radicalised him. And the final jolt, as I said, was... the hanging of Ronald Ryan. And then, of course, we had Albert Langer, famous in the 60s for the Monash Labour Club, which was really a bunch of Maoists. And he turned up. We were very pleased that he eventually made it and gave us a bit of his famous oratory, and it was really good fun.
Yeah, it was. Also, realising that I'm talking to you from 3CR, and, of course, 3CR is a love child of all the things that happened in your book.
I thought, well, that's right. That's right. Community radio was a big thing that came out of that came out of the 60s and 70s. So much happened in that period, and so much changed. And it was while we were writing the book that we realised that we had to include cultural and social history rather than just political activity. So that was when we included Vivian Binns from Canberra, who was the first feminist artist.
What a wild woman.
Oh, totally. She scandalised Australia in 1967 by having a exhibition which included paintings of vaginas, and there was one particular vagina that had teeth in it, which of course shocked the male art critics.
Yeah, and of course they would have been predominantly male art critics, I would have thought.
Oh, probably in those days, completely.
Yeah, exactly.
And we also did an interview with Josefa Sopsky, who became a very well-known feminist in Sydney. But also she had that migrant background.
Oh, I love that story. Her story was great.
Growing up in the migrant hostel at in Sydney, and being so Catholic that she wanted to be a nun, and then ending up discovering feminism, which was a big change for her.
Yeah, it's fascinating because really what it's about is stepping over a line, like getting information, stepping over a line, and then finding your personal agency.
Yes. And the interesting thing is that sometimes their change was quite gradual, but you can still see a moment. For instance, for my aha moment or epiphany or whatever we call it, I'd been getting increasingly worried about the war in Vietnam. I'd been reading about it and seeing it on my television, you know, at night, the dead bodies, which, as I say, really we'd never seen dead bodies on screen before. I mean, Vietnam was the first television war, and I'd become increasingly worried about it and increasingly thinking about what did I believe about the world. And I remember waking up one morning and thinking, gosh, I'm a socialist. And I ran into, I got to uni and ran into, you know, the SRC rooms, and I met there an old friend, Geoffrey Robertson, now the human rights lawyer. And I said, Geoff, guess what, I'm a socialist. And he said, oh, don't be silly, Meredith, we're all socialists.
One of the ones that was particularly poignant and points out something very valuable about what's going on at the moment was the young high school activist. She was fantastic. What a woman.
Yes, Helen Voicy, who we have a lovely picture in there of her in sort of plaits at the age of 17 addressing one of the Sydney moratoriums because she was the secretary of the high school students against the war in Vietnam, which was a very important group. But these were kids. I mean, at the age of 17, I wasn't thinking about the war. You know, I was 18 or 19 before university hit me. But here they were at school organising against the war. They were very impressive people.
Yeah. And, of course, Albert Langer. I did ask him last night, wasn't he a precocious 14-year-old? And he denied it.
He was climbing out his bedroom window to go to ALP meetings.
What a wild man.
Says everyone else was climbing out the window to go to a party, but he was going to the Labor Party.
Yeah, no, it's pretty funny. So, you know, the air was on fire, really. But leading to the end of this is that all the people that are included, and many others, of course, have all gone on to effectively express their agency in their work, their later work.
Yes, every single one of them were still sort of actively involved in some sort of political or cultural activity, to progressive activity that was hopefully making the world a better place. All of them, and some of them very publicly, like Geoffrey Robertson or David Marr, who was another one we talked to. Or Peter Manning, people like that doing it quite publicly, but others were doing it in their own particular area or, you know, still working medically in the Northern Territory or something like that. It was really interesting how the radicalism had stayed with them and the desire for a better world.
The 60s, that 60s certainly set a fire in Australia.
Oh, yes. And I'm sure that I'm a different person because of 1968. And I think all the other people that we interviewed would probably say the same thing.